From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Wednesday, March 29th, 2017. And on this day, a Maine senator throws his hat into the ring, where the ring is exploring a run against independent U.S. Senator Angus King in 2018. And more controversy over a plan for a York County casino referendum. Those stories ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by USM's Muskie School of Public Service Master of Public Health Program, preparing students for today's complex population health and health services needs.
It's a long time until the November 2018 election, but at least one hat is in the electoral ring. Two-term Republican State Senator Eric Brakey of Auburn has formed an exploratory committee to run for the U.S. Senate against incumbent independent Senator Angus King. Mal Leary has more.
Brakey says in order to raise money to travel around the state and to test the political waters, a prospective candidate must file an exploratory committee with federal election officials. He says he's been considering seeking the Republican nomination for months. If Governor Paul LePage decides to run, Brakey acknowledges that he will be the underdog, but he says he can't afford to wait and see what LePage does. Brakey says he won't make a final decision on running until he's had a chance to assess his support. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
Now turning from the world of politics to the world of casino gambling, or at least the world of politics and casino gambling, an offshore investment firm with a checkered history in gambling projects is backing a controversial casino proposal in York County. The project has been cloaked in secrecy, but the link was revealed in a hearing by the legislature's Veterans and Legal Affairs Committee. That's an unusual move for a proposal that is set to appear before voters in November. Steve Missler has details.
If approved at the ballot box, the casino could funnel millions in profits to an assortment of interest groups, local schools, colleges, Maine's Native American tribes, veterans, and a harness racing industry that's in financial dire straits. But none of those entities testified in support of the casino campaign Wednesday. And Democratic Senator Michael Carpenter took notice.
All of the various entities that stand to literally make millions of dollars if this entity were to go, and nobody wants to touch this.
But one person spoke in support of the proposal. Dan Riley is a Portland attorney representing Bridge Capital, a high-risk investment firm based in Saipan. Over the years, Riley has lobbied for an array of clients at the Statehouse. He was hired by Bridge Capital just hours before the hearing, and this was his response to many of the committee's questions.
I just don't know.
Lawmakers have a lot of questions about the casino campaign, which has spent over $4 million just to get on the ballot, and has thus far operated well outside the realm of traditional campaigns. Lawmakers want to know if the officers of Capital 7 LLC, the firm that first brought gambling to Maine over a decade ago, are the same as Bridge Capital, whether either firm is paying Lisa Scott, the Miami woman who has exclusively financed the current ballot initiative. Riley was also asked why the campaign bills itself as supporting harness racing when the referendum does not appear to provide for construction or operation of a racetrack.
I didn't draft this, Senator, as I told you, so I can't tell you who did or exactly what the intention was.
Audible there is a lawmaker impatiently drumming a pen. But while many of the questions were left unanswered, the public hearing succeeded in revealing a significant detail. Bridge Capital is backing the casino campaign. Sean Scott, the only person the referendum would allow to build the casino, is a partner at Bridge Capital. His sister Lisa is bankrolling the campaign. Scott is also the man who first brought gambling to Maine after his campaign successfully convinced Bangor voters to approve slots at a racetrack there in 2003. Scott later obtained a racino license, but not before the Maine Harness Racing Commission accused him and his business associates of operating a web of shell companies and, quote, sloppy if not irresponsible financial management. The report also revealed Scott and his associates were involved in over two dozen lawsuits over an eight-year period. The trail of litigation has followed Scott and his associates ever since he sold the Bangor facility to Penn National in 2004 netting him $51 million. That includes the seizure of a gambling facility run by Bridge Capital by the government of Laos 2 years ago. And that track record is why the Bridge Capital revelation is significant, according to Democratic Representative Louis Lucchini.
If the Bridge Capital principals are trying to get a license, I don't think there's a state in the country that would ever license them. It was questionable if they'd get a license back in 2003.
Lucchini and other lawmakers peppered Riley during the hearing. Riley had little to say in response, and instead characterized the casino campaign as an investment opportunity for Bridge Capital.
If you're successful and your upfront money is successful, then other companies like Churchill Downs and Penn National will come in and pay a real premium on the dollar.
But the approach taken by the campaign bristled lawmakers. Republican Senator Ron Collins, who represents the county where the casino could be located, weighed in before leaving during the middle of the hearing.
Bridge Capital, I don't think, cares what's in this bill. They're going to be spending millions of dollars on advertising, and it'll be slick advertising, just like their whole approach to this was slick.
Lucchini agreed. He said the casino backers had paraded the proposal as if they cared about saving the ailing harness racing industry.
When it appears very clear that their intention is to have this shell corporation, which they can flip and sell to somebody else, which is what Mr. Scott did the first time.
But even the Maine Harness Horsemen's Association, which the casino campaign would purportedly benefit, didn't take a position Wednesday. Bob Tardy spoke on behalf of the organization. He says it had no contact with the ballot campaign, and it wasn't backing the proposal. He says the harness racing industry will find other ways to recover.
Not this pie in the sky, what might come in the future.
Lawmakers are expected to hold future work sessions on the casino bill before likely sending it to voters. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
Staff at the Maine Public Utilities Commission say regulators should reject all the bids they've received to provide new liquefied natural gas storage in the state. At the same time, Governor Paul LePage is urging the Public Utilities Commission to go ahead and sign a contract. Fred Bever has more.
Last year, the legislature authorized the use of up to $25 million a year collected from consumers' electricity bills to incentivize new LNG storage capacity. The goal was to stabilize gas supply needed for electricity generation in Maine, particularly in the winter months when demand can drive its price sky high. 11 bids were considered, with plans for massive LNG tanks proposed at various locations in Maine. This week, the commission's staff recommended all the bids be rejected. The report found that none would serve the public interest or were likely to save consumers money. That's echoed by Tim Schneider, the state's public advocate.
When you look at the benefits that they laid out, it's really just speculating with ratepayer money that this might pay off.
But also this week, the acting director of Governor LePage's energy office, Angela Monroe, wrote to the commission saying a gas storage contract should be approved as a hedge against energy price spikes. The three-member commission, which has come under fire from LePage in recent weeks, is likely to decide the matter next month. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
Finally today, imagine you open a restaurant in some far-flung location, but you are forbidden to tell anyone that it's there. That's exactly what happened in the mid-coast town of Southport, where selectmen have placed restrictions on a waterfront eatery opened by developer Paul Coulomb. Coulomb made his fortune in the vodka business, but he is not allowed to sell liquor at the restaurant. And as Murray Carpenter explains, he's not allowed to advertise.
To get to Oliver's, a seasonal restaurant with $24 lobster rolls on the menu, you travel down through Booth Bay, over the bridge to Southport, meander along narrow roads, and finally turn onto an even smaller road that leads to scenic Cozy Harbor. The town owns the landing and the building on it, and several years ago agreed to lease the property to Paul Coulomb to open Oliver's.
We used to have a restaurant there that was very low-key. A native fella ran it, and, you know, everybody loved him.
Jerry Gamage, Southport's first selectman, says the permit was granted with certain restrictions designed to reflect the feel of the original restaurant.
Didn't have alcohol and he didn't want to advertise. He just wanted to have a few people there. So it was a change of venue and a lot of concern about, you know, increased traffic, issues with alcohol being consumed and the like. So that's why restrictions were made.
5 years ago, Coulomb made more than $600 million from the sale of his Lewiston-based White Rock Distilleries to Beam, Inc., the makers of Jim Beam Bourbon. He's used some of that wealth to transform much of the Booth Bay region, investing tens of millions into the golf club he owns, pushing through a proposal for a roundabout on Route 27, and building a lavish Southport mansion with a gold chandelier. Just this year, he bought a 100-room Booth Bay Harbor Inn. But despite all of that spending, Coulomb has repeatedly failed to get permission from Southport to sell liquor at Oliver's or to allow him to advertise the business.
He has been advertising.
Southport homeowner Lee Smith says some people feel that Coulomb has been defying the wishes of the town.
From what I heard at the meeting, that upsets a lot of people because he's not supposed to be advertising, yet he still is advertising. So people let the selectmen know that they do not want the advertising to continue.
Well, we voted on that, and people don't want to change the ordinance as it is.
Southport resident Bob Eaton says he agrees with the restrictions that Coulomb agreed to.
He was well aware of it when he opened the business and so forth. I would say sooner or later, someday, he probably will, but right now, I let things go as they are.
Eaton says he likes Oliver's, but he also wants to keep Southport just the way it is.
We don't like to advertise too much because we know what we have.
You like to keep it nice and quiet down here.
It's nice and quiet, and it's a nice place to live. And in fact, I wouldn't go anywhere else myself, but that's just my opinion.
In another clash with Southport residents 4 years ago, Coulomb proposed blasting and dredging a channel in order to moor his boat closer to his house. He withdrew the plan after public opposition, but he was permitted to dredge mud from Cozy Harbor to allow access for Oliver's diners who arrive on boats at low tide. Selectman Jerry Gamage says he appreciates the dredging and Coulomb's other improvements to the landing at Cozy Harbor, and he personally feels that the restaurant should be able to advertise in order to assure that it will be viable. But Gamage says Coulomb's way of doing business poses challenges.
He's a very forceful individual, so he tends to push things forward, and that rubs people the wrong way. But bottom line is that he's rubbed enough people the wrong way that it'd be hard pressed for him to get something that you and I perhaps would find a little easier.
Coulomb did not respond to interview requests for this story, and for now, Oliver's will remain a low-profile eatery, where the man who made hundreds of millions of dollars selling vodka will have to settle for a glass of wine or a bottle of beer with his meal. For Maine Public Radio, I'm Murray Carpenter.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine, March 29th, 2017. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team, I'm Nora Flaherty.